House, Joe McGrath, Troy Malcolm, welcome number 200.
Happy birthday, boys.
Happy birthday.
How's
200
that?
200 episodes.
200. So we have sat down together 200 times and not talked about much.
That's right. The Seinfeld show, the Seinfeld podcast. No, no, look, I mean, it's great. I've loved doing it. How long did you say, Troy?
Coming up to November, we are five years in.
That sounds bizarre. I literally feels like, you know, 2 years.
I remember the call. You said to me, I still remember. It's funny how you remember where you're at and the time of day. Sunlight was coming through. Yeah. I was at Burke Street, Alexandria, and you said to me, we'll get this, you know, this podcast, and then for about a week or two, we're playing around with an image on what the image would look like. Yeah. And then the weirdest thing happened is about 10 episodes in, every person I'd speak to, not every, that's, you know, exaggerating, but a lot of real estate people I'd speak to, they'd say, hey, I listened to the Million Dollar Agent podcast. It must have been the time that podcasting was sort of just, you know, skyrocketing as a form of education.
And hasn't it? I mean, it makes a lot of sense because you can listen to what you want to listen to without advertisements, when you want to listen to it, where you want to listen to it. So as opposed to, say, radio or TV, which have a sense of having to be in front of a certain instrument at a certain time. You know, you can listen to it at 5 a.m. while you're going for a run. You can listen to it before you go to bed. You can listen to it between appointments. So I think it's good for our industry podcasts. So good. So, Troy, congratulations.
Congratulations, guys. Congratulations and thank you, I guess. Thank you to every single listener that keeps tuning in week, sending in their questions, and really making us feel great about getting the feedback, because we do this for everyone that listens, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of the fact we get to hang out, but I just want to say a big thank you to everyone that keeps listening and keeps sending the feedback.
And John, I presume the gift that Troy has just hand over to me is in lieu of I'll take this over the lunch, to be honest with you, what I've been given here.
No, we're going to do a lunch too.
We'll do a lunch.
When the dust all settles, we'll do a lunch.
Okay, so great podcast topic is episode 1, episode 200, that's 4 years. In those 4 years, what are 5 or 6 things that we have noticed have been changes in the real estate industry, topics that we seem to have changed our conversations on? And I'd love to get your idea also towards the end of this podcast on what big next, you know?
Great. It's a great topic because it's actually closer to 5, I reckon, than 4, but, you know, certainly 4.5 years. And I think a lot has changed, but it's a bit like, you know, when you see your own kids growing up every day, you don't notice the change until someone that hasn't seen them. So let's have a think about it. I mean, thing that comes to mind for me, Tom, a couple of things. Firstly is, in general, I think the expectations of the customer have risen significantly.
Mm.
And, you know, people talk about Google time now. You know, you want an answer to a question, you pick your phone up, you type it in, and then there's 3 million responses within half a second. And I think that has infiltrated everyone. People don't want to wait. There is a real-time sense of urgency. People expect the answer, the result, the service to be happening instantaneously. They expect it to be delivered to their phone or inbox. So I think, you know, whether it's the real estate industry or not, every industry has to pick up their socks. And I think especially for real estate, it's still quite an ancient, and I know we're going to talk in a minute about some of the other things which will include various technology, but I think it's still a bit of an ancient industry, and we need to be moving away from the dinosaur age into the 21st, 22nd century. So I guess the first thing for me would be people expect more, faster than ever before, deliver or die. Either find a way to deliver it systematically, technologically, energetically, or you're going to be a dinosaur.
So John, I remember, I would say maybe, let's say 15, 20 years ago, the gap between McGrath and the rest of the industry was massive. And you stood out. If that were to happen in 2018, McGrath wouldn't be compared to other real estate offices. It'd be compared to Uber. It'd be compared to other sectors. And I think what consumers are doing now is they're not just saying that agent's better than another agent.
Yeah.
They're actually comparing the service through cross industries.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think It's funny, I went to renew my license just yesterday, and I went in there expecting, you know, to sit in a chair for 4 hours and be abused and wait and be given a ticket that takes me several hours. And I went in and, like, a concierge greeted me. "Why are you here today, sir?" I said, "This is what I'm here. Please, can we do this? Here you go." They took me to a computer. I logged into it, and like 15 minutes later, I was gone with a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
And that's like a government department. I'm not being rude about government departments, but traditionally,
yeah,
as opposed to private enterprise, government departments have been lagging behind. But I got to say that the experience I got yesterday at, I don't know if it's a motor transport, wherever it's called nowadays, it was probably as good as you would have got from the Ritz-Carlton 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So everyone's moving up. And you mentioned Uber, Tommy. You know, you used to have to wait for cabs and get abused by people in smelly cabs. Now Uber has taken it to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Courtesy of technology. And the thing I love about Uber, by the way, which I think for our industry is incredibly important, is rating agents.
Yeah.
And I know there are some sites out there that rate them, which I think is kind of good, but the only problem is most of them only are rated by people that they personally invite to rate them, which means you're not getting a real cross-section because you're not inviting people that were disgruntled with your service. But anyway, look, I think it's better than nothing to start the whole ratings conversation.
But there has been, I would say there's a lot of room for real estate to meet that gap that consumers expect, speed,
expectation. Be more, do more. John, you have spoken about a lot, and we've spoken on the podcast about that previously. The expectation of the consumer is so much more than what it was because of technology, of other experiences from other industries. They know how to do things.
Troy, would you say that there have been improvements by the industry in certain factors? Like, I think, I can't help but think pest inspections and building inspections.
Yep.
Used to be like, hey, we've got to get this pest and building inspection. Now that process seems to be a lot seamless for progressive officers with pest and building inspections available. I just...
The easiest
one is the contract. You know, you used to actually have to go to the Open for Inspection, request the draft copy, go to your solicitor, give them the draft copy. If two or three pages fell off in transport, that would be an interesting conversation. Now it can be downloaded straight away from the internet. It can be emailed directly to the conveyancer or the solicitor. That in its simplest form speaks volumes for where we're headed as well around expectations.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking, and we do talk offline a lot about big data. There will be a day in the future, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, that you will know who the buyer is of your property before you even have to take it to market.
Yeah.
There will be a button that you push and you connect the dots. But then that comes back to profiling with agents. So agents need to get better at what they do and how they profile them as themselves as the hyper-local knowledge expert because of the expectation of the consumer or the client.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that, Troy, towards the end of the podcast, because before we came on air, John mentioned that the community agent, the person that basically becomes the node that connects all other nodes. If you actually just think of the community as being nodes, it's this agent that seems to be in the center of a system, an ecosystem, and they seem to actually curate information and get people together and support people.
Connect people.
That seems to be a prominent agent. But to start off with, I would probably say the most obvious thing I've seen during the time of our podcast is this emergence of the super agent. There was always an assistant.
What's your definition of a super agent?
A super agent, John, is someone that essentially basically runs a real estate office within a real estate office. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen that get bigger. I've seen previously we knew that there was an assistant or a CSN that used to basically do lower dollar productive activity, but I think what's actually happened is there are people that are writing $5 million in GCI now by having a proper infrastructure of 5, 7, 8 people in their own little pod. And that was probably a profound thing that's happened in the last few years.
And it came across from the US because I think, and ARIC would have been a part of this, you know, that in some of the early speakers in ARIC talked about building teams, and Bob Boland, of course, who was one of the very first speakers at ARIC, spoke a lot about it, and I think that was the beginning of the conversation. And then an agent started hiring an assistant, and then an assistant and a buyer associate or a buyer specialist. And you're right, nowadays there are agents that are selling 1 to 200, agent teams, 1 to 200. And I think that's going to become more and more prevalent. I think that going forward, there'll be less single agents on their own with no one helping them. There'll be some, but not as many. And there'll be more agents that actually mentor, coach, recruit teams around them and work within businesses like ours and all the other big brands that are out there. Because I still think community for agents, you know, people kind of like to connect with each other. And I know that with us, that's a lot of the feedback we get. A lot of the agents that love working with us or join us is they want to be a part of a high-performance community. So I think that there is still definitely, there'll be a change in the way brands operate, but there's still room for good brands that bring community of good agent teams together.
I was going to say, do you see it, both John and Tom, consolidation of brands? Do you think it's got to that point in time where we see the race to the top of being part of a bigger community and having that, I guess, the pillar of influence that Dr. Robert Cialdini talks a lot about, unity?
So when you say consolidation of brands,
if I'm an independent ABC real estate, would I see the benefit of going to a brand that does have high-performing talent, processes, systems?
There's two questions embedded in that. One is, will there be fewer big brands? And two is, will the independents join those fewer big brands?
Correct.
I think that some of the big brands that have been around for a while will either reinvent or die as we speak. I think some of them have got left behind in their thinking and their processes and a whole range of things, and I think they need to either reinvent very, very quickly, which, to be honest, I doubt some of them will, because they're kind of run by the old-fashioned brigade. So I think that in that regard, Troy, and there'll be a couple of other entrants into the market. I mean, we've seen Purple Bricks lately, which is a slightly different model, but there might be a couple of other entrants that come from overseas or come from internally. But, I think the independents, there will always be a place for independents, for sure. But I think they'll become more hyper-focused on areas. They'll become more specialist in smaller areas in a lot of ways. And I think that some of the brands that have multiple super teams will continue to grow.
I think one of the issues is a lot of the really, really big networks, call them cooperatives or call them franchises, the issue that's being faced is if you look at a P&L report of a real estate office and call it a small real estate office, you'll see that financially it doesn't stack up for the risk, time, effort. But a lot of people that are, you know, let's assume that they're at the afternoon of their career, they're not the kind of person that is into growth mode, and they may accept that they're going to make less money, but they don't have an appetite to actually go off and build a business unit and change their model. But I've seen it in McGrath's, and I'm seeing it in a lot around real estate, where people are saying, I'm going to leave the fixed costs behind of a smaller, you know, business, and I'll sort of fit into another real estate office that allows me to just focus on sales. Who did we talk about?
I think what you're saying, if it is what you're saying, I agree that a lot of people that maybe once thought they wanted to start their own office, they're now starting their own team within an office.
Correct. Yeah.
Without having to have all the tensions and issues that comes with running an entire business, and just running a small team of 2, 3, 4, or 5 people. And as you've said, you mentioned a number of $5 million, and the number of people that are writing those sort of dollars are now, every year there's a few more. I mean, Alex Phillips, Michael Pallier, Matt Steinwade, you know, James Tostevin. There's a number of people that are, you know, kind of, that are there doing those kind of numbers as we speak, and I think that's growing. So I think that's definitely one. What about, if we swing to kind of what we've been talking about already, technology, and I want to hear from you, because I think this is one of your great fields of expertise, which is social. That's kind of, REA was kind of the first big change, you know, a decade or so ago, maybe 2 decades ago now, it's kind of getting closer to, where it brought in the ability to take the rivers of gold from, you know, a broadsheet paper into a digital space. But I think more recently we've seen social becoming a really big way people not just promote themselves but also starting to promote property.
So for me it became very clear, John, because of my relationship at News, I would fit in and do a Sky Business piece on a Monday night on the Foxtel, which doesn't get massive amounts of viewers, but it's still a national show. And what I was doing was taking the segment off the show – and just putting on Facebook, 2 minutes on my Facebook account. And that's when I noticed when people would say, hey, I saw you on Sky Business. So for the 4 years before that, they weren't watching it. That was my first sort of light bulb moment. Hey, there's eyeballs on social media that appeared that have left traditional media or weren't watching media. And then the next part of it, John and Troy, is I began to realise, and agents realise it now, it is not a gimmick. No. It in fact creates influence. Buyers and sellers are influenced by having a behind-the-scenes view of what you are like as a person on social media. Mm. And they will believe that more than you shoving things in people's letterboxes saying, wow, look at me. Mm. They'd rather have this relationship with you. And I say there's no more blind dates in business. I actually think by the time that they've met you at the listing presentation, it's pretty much all done and dusted by then. You know, they've sort of...
Yeah. It's easy to research. I think it's critical. And I was just thinking about your Sunday night rant that I'm sure every one of our listeners has seen or probably looks at each week. You've got your own TV station.
Mm.
And you do it from home. And it costs minimal, next to nothing really, to put it through the Facebook channel. And you can connect with thousands of people either there live or, you know, watch it later.
Mm.
And I think you look at that, Troy, the impact, and we know ourselves anecdotally as we go around the group, the number of people, when we're at Newtown today, Adrian Savalas has become a master of marketing his properties through REA and through social media channels. Mm. And you've got Alex Mintorn up at Warunga has had phenomenal success marketing his own personal brand, getting invited into a lot of homes he never would have been invited into, courtesy of a strong social presence. So there's no doubt, I think, that we've saw the first wave, which hasn't finished, by the way. Digital is still incredibly, statistically, is still by far the most dominant way to connect buyers with property. But we have got this emerging channel called social, and it's not just Facebook, of course. There's Instagram, there's LinkedIn, and I know you're very good with LinkedIn, Troy. You get great response. Anyone that's listening that's not looking at Troy's LinkedIn, they should join because you put, like, papers up and
articles. It's a great way to kind of communicate. It is another channel. The thing with social is I was doing a coaching session yesterday and one of the agents said, yeah, that's well and good. I get the social thing is real now. It's not a gimmick. But in my market, everyone's, you know, baby boomer generation, slightly older. They're not looking at social. The reality of that is...
Which they are.
They are. The reality is... They are. The fastest growing demographic and age group on that social channels are kind of... in
60 to 70, right?
Yes, 50 to 65-year-olds, male and female, both genders. But the other thing is that if they've lived in the same residence for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, they've got children. Most of them would have children. Their children are now influencing their parents when it does come time to sell by going on social and doing an interview. Like we said, there's no blind dates in real estate. So I'd encourage all agents just to start acting on social. You don't need to sponsor a lot of money. It actually doesn't cost a lot to reach a lot of people. The one thing I would say in regards to social, don't do the generic stuff, because if you squint, all agents will look the same. You need to show your authentic self. You need to be a little bit
more. You got to be real. You got to be real.
Because people will read the facade and they'll start connecting that if your online profile doesn't match your real life. Yeah.
Especially Troy in that channel. I mean, you know, television still has got, you know, a degree of this polished kind of actor presenter type mode about it. It's kind of, but I think that social channels, they want real.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why, Tom, your Facebook on a Sunday night is so brilliant, because it's kind of like it's just the real deal, and you're sitting there and you can tell you've just had dinner or about to have dinner and you're just having this chat to people, and it comes across so authentically. So, yeah, I think that that's...
So let's talk about... we've talked about social. Let's talk an extension of that, video. Mm-hmm. So 5 years ago, videos were happening 5 years ago, but it appears video 2.0 or whatever number we want to... call it
10.
Video 10.0. Let's break it up. Agents use video now to promote property.
Yep.
They feature in the video a lot of the times,
yep,
which in many ways is an expression of who they are. Yep. And people in many ways, when I was involved heavily in print at News Corp, video was a concern that it would not only promote a property, but it would actually give local consumers a sense of what's this girl or guy like as a person. Because a video is a good way of working out, is this person knowledgeable? Are they nice? Are they stuck up? Or are they sort of caring? So video presenting property also presents yourself. Video market wraps. I notice some agents are even doing live stream Saturday afternoon wraps. Will Ainsworth from Geelong, I noticed on Instagram, does a 60-second, hey, we had 7 open for inspections and an average of 8 people come through.
Just to stop on that, if I can, I don't want you to lose that thought, but you talk about Willie Ainsworth. Last month, he and his team, 14 sales, 15 listings last month. Two things there, a couple of things. Agent teams, so he's a great example of someone who's taking his business to a phenomenal new level because he's employed, you know, great. He's got a great team of 3 around him.
Yep.
Brilliant people. And second one is, as you just said, Tom, he's tapping into social channels. He's tapping into weekly wraps. He'll often stand up with his phone and say, "G'day, it's Will. I'm standing in front of 10 Smith Street. I've just listed it. I'm going to put it on the internet in a couple of days' time. But, you know, really have a drive past. If you're interested, give me a call." And he's getting a lot of his property sold before they even hit the traditional channels of newsprint and even digital through the social channel. So he's a good example of
John,
that.
I interviewed him in the real estate gym 6 months ago, and I remember I said, "What's your best form of prospecting?" He said, "At the moment, every Wednesday," might have been Tuesday, I thought it was Wednesday, "every Wednesday is our property video day." And he said, "During this day, I shoot property videos. These videos are then targeted to go around that property on social media. This becomes our digital door knock." So you could turn around and say, "Wednesday is our digital door knock." I said, "How many videos do you do?" He said, "Listed 94 properties, did 94 videos for the year." Mm-hmm. Right? That's the process. And I believe he's a million-dollar agent, isn't he, John, or thereabouts?
He'll be closer to 2 this year, but he's cracked over $1 million last year.
Mm.
I love that we're talking about video. I think, given the choice, and we all know it, everyone listening, given the choice of reading a page of text or watching a 60-second video, we all watch a 60-second video if it's done well and it's informative and well-presented. And that's the way people are going. Yeah, they click on, and by the way, tip for videos, don't make them any more than 60 to 90 seconds max. Yeah. Unless it's particularly, some instructive thing. Most people, I think the numbers are, and it's 70 seconds or something you get them for, and then they click off.
Yeah, so seven. It's the whole model of YouTube, as we all have seen, those pre-roll ads that come through. You get 5 seconds before you can skip the ad. There is science behind that. People are trading attention within that first 7 or 8 seconds before you get there. There is the magic minute mark, which, as we all know, the listeners online right now, you get a minute to upload into Instagram. That's why those minute wraps on a Saturday afternoon, as Jeff Benioff, the Salesforce CEO.
Mark Benioff.
He said that speed is the new currency of business. So by waiting until Monday to call everyone and tell them about what happened on the weekend, that's now dead and gone. You can reach 1,000 people, 2,000 people, 3,000 people, up to 8,000 in some of the examples that we've just mentioned, every single Saturday afternoon that becomes relevant, right? So that magic minute and within the first kind of 7-8 seconds engaging with someone is going to set you apart, right? And it is normally these 3 things. Updating on the market, updating on the number of inspections, updating on any auctions, some interesting fact. That's what gets us there.
Okay. So the last one, I think, because we were talking about it this interview, Tommy, I think you were talking about pressure on fees.
So, John, fees, like, they have probably from when we started in 2018, you would say that this is a top-level assessment. They've probably come down as a percentage.
Yeah, I think so. And, well, as a dollar sign, they've probably gone up because the market's doubled. Most markets have doubled. So, and that's become one of the, I think there's been 2 pressures on it. One is you've got the purple bricks factor.
Yeah.
That you now have high profile, low cost models. Now, whether you think they're good or bad or they're successful or not, they certainly raise awareness in the consumer world that there is an option to paying 2.5%. Now, it's a 6,000, 7,000, whatever it is. I think there are flaws in the model personally, but I embrace the fact that consumers should be able to choose from a whole range of options. And traditional agency, let's call that what most of our listeners would do, is one of them. So I think that's an impact. The other thing is a lot of people have seen prices rise so rapidly, and they're also seeing stamp duty has risen significantly. So you've got someone's about to make a purchase sale and transition from property A to property B. They're saying, well, hang on a sec, my property was worth 600, it's now worth a million. If you'd have sold it, you know, sort of 4 years ago, you would have got 10 to 12,000, whatever the number was, and now you're saying you want 22,000. That seems a bit too much. So I think whenever we see a spike in prices, Troy, we often have the conversation around commission. Then you got the purple bricks factor in. So what do I think? I think that there is going to be an erosion to some degree of fees. I don't think it's coming down to kind of 1% in most markets, but I don't think those that are charging currently 2.5% to 3% will get away with it for a lot longer. And there are markets in Australia that are getting 3%.
But John, do you think part of the issue is that the average punter out there, the mum and dad, because they're socially media savvy and they're tech savvy, believe that realestate.com and domain.com will generally deliver a buyer on a property, and they've started to think to themselves, hey, I do need an agent because I don't want to be sitting here on a Saturday morning with a clipboard taking names down at an open house. But I actually think that 90% of the value is realestate.com and domain delivering a buyer. So the average person does this calculation in their head and says, it's not worth 50 grand. It's probably worth 25, 30 grand as a fee.
Yeah, look, I think that might be a bit of it. I think the purple bricks thing has really brought the comment. I think they spent 17 million last year, last 12 months, in advertising low commission kind of type models, fixed fee. And so that gives everyone, oh, wow, okay, so I don't have to pay 2 or 3%. So then they have a conversation with their agent. The other thing is there's been an extreme shortage of listings.
Yeah.
So, you know, supply and demand, if there's enough to go around and everyone seems to think they're getting their reasonable fill, they kind of sit at a level, and all of a sudden, you know, you take the number of listings that have come out of the market the last few years out, everyone wants one of those listings.
Yeah.
So we're getting, you know, I'm hearing deals like 1% commission and we'll pay for all your marketing, which probably means the agent, the company and agent are sharing 0.4% or 0.3%, which becomes nonsensical. But, you know, they take the view better to have 0.4% than zero.
Isn't it a value thing, though? Like, fee becomes slightly irrelevant if they know that you're the best person to achieve them a premium price. Like, if value's there, fee is important, but it's not the most important thing to a consumer. Right? And I think that's where you're going, Tom, by saying if it goes on realestate.com and it goes on domain.com and all the agents are kind of pitching something similar, then what's the value of paying 2.5%, 3%? That's where that discount model comes in. So the more value that we provide, the more opportunity there is to, I guess, charge the fee that you deserve.
Yes. Yeah. And I think just generally, people are expecting more for less everywhere they go.
Yeah.
People have become, and the big cities become very expensive to live in. So where people are eating and you know, the tolls and the transportation and everything. So I do think that money's become important. The other phenomena we've seen at the same time is, generally speaking, not phenomena, but the other fact we've seen, Tom, is agent splits have been going up.
Yeah.
So for a principal, which is why a lot of people, I think, are choosing not to be principals and are choosing to work within a principal environment, you know, you've got erosion of, you know, maybe the traditional 2.2%'s come down to 1.8%, and maybe the traditional 45-50% split to an agent's gone now 50-60%. So there are definitely pressures. So I think, how do you deal with that? I think for a lot of businesses, it's going to be scaling up. As you said before, for kind of a small, medium-sized business, it might become very, very hard to compete. Second thing is efficiencies, is just utilising systems and technology to get things done more rapidly. And people have been talking a lot about outsourcing. That's happening a bit, where people are going to other countries via technology to get, you know, lower dollar per hour, you know, labour hire to do certain activities, especially in things like property management. So I think there will continue to be that, but I'm with you, Troy. I take the view that if you're the best at what you do and you're providing great value, hyper-local knowledge and delivering extraordinary results to your clients, you have a very safe future for the next 20 or 30 years, no doubt. Mm. If you're not... Corollary, though, is if you're a commodity type agent that used to get away with doing a little bit of fee discounting, doing an average job, paying for marketing, those sort of things, I think you are at real risk because
people really, if they're either going to go to a very, very low-cost model and almost half do it themselves, or they want the expert that can get them an extra 10%. So I think that middle ground is going to disappear. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I guess we'll talk about it in 5 years, see if we're all right. Years.
So, Troy, I'm just trying to do the numbers. So this is 200. For us, our next big milestone will be 300, and we're going to achieve that in 2 years from now.
Hopefully, yeah. Okay. Or 250 would be a pretty good milestone too. For
250, 250. That'll be August 2019. So wishing all our listeners all the health in the world. We'd love to be every step of the way with you to episode 1,000, right?
Yeah.
Because if we're at episode 1,000, it basically means, what's that mean, Troy? That means that I'll be alive for another 16 years, right? And that'll be a big win, even though we still probably won't be making any money of it. But I'll take 16 years. I want to thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure working with you over these 200 episodes. I want to thank our listeners.
Our
real currency.
Too.
What's that?
Our sponsors.
Our sponsors, of course. Realestate.com, who've been every step of the way. And we are talking about... we are probably going to have another sponsor coming on board, John and Troy, and I'm going to talk to you about that offline.
We get two coffees now.
Two coffees per episode. That's easy to drive a hard bargain.
I also do want to just make special mention to those listeners that continue to send in questions, because it really does make the show. We want to make it as relevant as possible. We want to make sure that we're covering off the questions and the challenges that you guys have in the market. So continue to send them through, because without you guys, the show doesn't really operate.
That's what we might do next time, I think. Let's start off with a Q&A Tuesday.
Gang, it makes it easier for other people to find the podcast if you rate it and review it on wherever you get your podcast from. Most people get it from iTunes. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Bye. See you guys.